Hello, this is Jamie Peterson with the Herald and Review for Wednesday, February 19th, 2020. We'll begin our reading with the front page headline, Sentence Reduced, out of Chicago by Michael Tarm, former Illinois governor set free. Rod Blagojevich, federal inmate 408-92-424 and the 40th governor of Illinois, was released from prison Tuesday after President Donald Trump cut short a 14-year sentence for political corruption. The Republican president said the punishment imposed on the Democrat and one-time contestant on Trump's reality TV show Celebrity Apprentice was excessive. "So he'll be able to go back home with his family," Trump told reporters. "That was a tremendously powerful, ridiculous sentence, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many others." The Federal Bureau of Prisons released a statement after 7 p.m. saying that Blagojevich is no longer in the custody of the agency and was released from a prison in Colorado. The 63-year-old was convicted in 2011 of crimes that included seeking to sell an appointment to Barack Obama's old Senate seat and trying to shake down a children's hospital. Trump has said repeatedly in recent years that he was considering taking executive action in Blagojevich's case, only to back away from the idea. One of Blagojevich's lawyers said she refused to believe it at first when word of her client's possible release began to spread, fearing that the president might not follow through. "When it became obvious it was real, I got tears in my eyes," said Lauren Kaysberg. "It was overwhelming." The White House cited support from several Illinois-based leaders, including the Reverend Jesse Jackson, as supporting Blagojevich's early release. More than 100 of his fellow inmates also sent in letters of support. Trump made clear that he saw similarities between efforts to investigate his own conduct and those who took down Blagojevich. "It was a prosecution by the same people. Comey, Fitzpatrick, the same group," Trump said. He was referring to Patrick Fitzgerald, the former U.S. attorney who prosecuted Blagojevich and now represents former FBI Director James Comey, whom Trump fired in May 2017. The Illinois House in January 2009 voted 114-1 to impeach Blagojevich, and the state Senate voted unanimously to remove him, making him the first Illinois governor in history to be removed by lawmakers. He entered prison in March 2012. After exhausting his last appeal in 2018, Blagojevich seemed destined to remain behind bars until his projected 2024 release date. His wife, Patty, went on a media blitz in 2018 to encourage Trump to step in, praising the president and likening the investigation of her husband to Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller's probe into the Russian meddling in the 2016 election, a probe Trump long characterized as a witch hunt. At Blagojevich's home in Chicago's Ravenswood neighborhood, his wife's sister, Deb Mell, emerged onto the porch after a rideshare driver arrived to deliver food. She said the logistics of the former governor's return were not complete and that Patty Blagojevich would not speak to reporters until her husband is home. "The kids are overjoyed and Patty's ecstatic," Mell said. A banner saying, "Thanks, Mr. President," was posted outside on the same porch from which the former governor left years ago. Patty Blagojevich tweeted Tuesday night that a press conference was planned at 11 a.m. Wednesday. Blagojevich's conviction was notable, even in a state where 4 of the last 10 governors have gone to prison for corruption. Judge James Zagel, who sentenced Blagojevich, the longest prison term yet for an Illinois politician, said when a governor goes bad, the fabric of Illinois is torn and disfigured. After his December 9, 2008 arrest while still governor, Blagojevich became known for his foul-mouthed rants on wiretaps. On the most notorious recording, he gushed about profiting by naming someone to the seat Obama vacated to become president. "I've got this thing, and it's expletive golden, and I'm just not going to give it up for expletive nothing." Trump expressed some sympathy for Blagojevich when he appeared on Celebrity Apprentice in 2010, before his first corruption trial started. When Trump fired Blagojevich as a contestant, he praised him for how he was fighting his criminal case, telling him, "You have a hell of a lot of guts." He later poll-tested the matter, asking for a show of hands of those who supported clemency at an October 2019 fundraiser at his Chicago hotel. Most of the 200 to 300 attendees raised their hands, the Wall Street Journal reported, citing several people at the event. On the same day, Trump told Chicago television station WLS that Blagojevich should not abandon hope of an early release. "No, he should not at all give up hope, at all," Trump said. "We're looking at it." Blagojevich's first trial ended with the jury unable to reach a verdict, except for a single conviction, for lying to the FBI. At his second trial in 2011, Blagojevich testified, describing himself as a flawed dreamer, grounded in his parents' working-class values. He sought to humanize himself, to counteract the seemingly greedy governor heard on wiretap recordings played in court. He said the hours of FBI recordings were the ramblings of a politician who liked to think out loud. He was convicted on 18 counts. The 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago in 2015 tossed out five of the convictions, including ones in which he offered to appoint someone to a high-paying job in the Senate. The appeals court ordered the trial judge to resentence Blagojevich, but suggested it would be appropriate to hand him the same sentence, given the gravity of the crimes. Blagojevich appeared via live video from prison during the 2016 resentencing and asked for leniency. The judge gave him the same 14-year term, saying it was below federal guidelines when he opposed it the first time. And out of Decatur by Annalisa Trofimik and Garrett Karsten. Decatur reaction mixed on decision. Residents and community leaders offered mixed reactions to news that President Donald Trump would commute the sentence of former Democratic Rod Blagojevich. Illinois politicians from both sides of the aisle criticized the president's decision, which allowed the former governor to walk out of prison Tuesday, more than 7 years into his 14-year sentence, on federal corruption charges. While some residents interviewed by the Herald and Review echoed those sentiments, the feeling wasn't universal. "I think it sends a message that corruption in government is to be tolerated," said Debbie McFadden of Decatur, who was not in favor of the commutation. Becky Watson of Decatur said political figures should have to suffer the consequences of their actions, just like anyone else. "I mean, we all have to pay for our wrongdoings and take responsibility for those," said Watson, 32. "And if you don't do the time and take responsibility for what you've done, then why should the rest of us?" But Cory Walker, president of the Illinois Black Chamber of Commerce, said he was happy about the decision, saying Blagojevich had done a lot for the African American community. "I am not in support of what he did as the governor of our state," Walker said, "but I think he tried to make a respectful effort in diversifying governmental roles." The late Roger Walker Jr., the first African-American sheriff in Illinois and Cory Walker's uncle, was appointed to the Department of Corrections in 2003 by Blagojevich. The former governor called Cory Walker to offer his condolences when Roger Walker died in 2012. Walker said he planned to reach out to Blagojevich in the coming days. "When it is official and he is back, I will call him and say welcome home," he said. Stephen Bopp of Decatur said he also favored the decision. Bopp said he had more qualms with Trump's behavior than what Blagojevich has done. "If you compare what Blagojevich was convicted of and you compare that to what Trump does, there's no comparison," said Bopp, 75. "The kinds of things that Trump is all about is of a worse category than what Blagojevich did. That's the point I'm trying to make. Now, I commend Trump for either commuting his sentence or giving him a pardon. That I have no problems with, so I don't want to confuse the two." Mayor Julie Moore Wolf worked in economic development under Blagojevich's administration. She said Tuesday that while she was understanding of the fact that his children had grown up without him, she saw serious concerns with the commutation. "It really concerns me when political figures interfere with what the judicial system has done," Moore Wolf said. "The other issue is that I don't believe that he has ever owned up to what he's done or said." Could the move affect Illinois Republicans' performance in the November elections? Amber Lisvardi, a professor of political science at Millikan University, said there are a lot of factors at play and many months to go, but it was notable that the former governor was unpopular with both parties. She pointed to a 2008 Chicago Tribune poll that showed 13% of citizens at that time approved of the job Blagojevich was doing. In a state where the legislature is overwhelmingly Democrat, the House voted 114-1 in favor of impeachment, and the Senate voted 59-0 for removal in 2009. "So it's safe to say Blagojevich seems to have a few friends left on either side of the aisle," Lisvardi said in an email. "It's unlikely that many voters were rooting for this result for Blagojevich." The sentence reduction is not without precedent, however. Trump previously pardoned Louis Scooter Libby, chief of staff to former Vice President Dick Cheney, who had been convicted of perjury and obstruction of justice that stemmed from a CIA leak. Former President George W. Bush had commuted Libby's sentence, but had not gone so far as to pardon him. Trump had said Libby, like Blagojevich, was treated unfairly. Probably the most famous presidential pardon is the one Gerald Ford gave to Richard Nixon before he even received any official charges in relation to Watergate, Lusvardi said. Most Americans at the time did not approve of Ford's pardon, but Ford thought it was the best move to heal a divided nation. The leaders of both the Macon County Republican and Democratic parties did not return calls seeking comment for the story. Also on the front page, from the Macon County Schools, by Garrett Karsten. Maroa Forsyth student victorious. Sixth grader prevails after 19 rounds, 9 advance to regional. For the second year in a row, Arnav Kaluru, a student at Maroa Forsyth Middle School, took the first place spot at the Macon County Spelling Bee. The sixth grader on Tuesday spelled the winning word arthritis, which describes inflammation and swelling in the joints, in the 19th round of the 42nd annual Spelling Bee in Richland Community College's Schilling Center. He and 8 other finalists will proceed to the regional Spelling Bee Saturday, March 21, at Eisenhower High School. The winner of that competition qualifies for the Scripps National Spelling Bee in Washington, D.C. Arnav stood out from the other competitors by spelling each word a bit slower and, especially in the later rounds, asking for each word's definition, part of speech, language of origin, and use in a sentence. This allowed him to gain a better understanding of the word before attempting to spell it, he said. Hours spent studying and getting quizzed by his dad also help him remember how certain words are constructed. I would remember the roots to help me understand because different origins can have different roots, he said, using contagion, a word he spelled correctly 3 rounds prior, as an example to explain his thought process. The definition is contagious, so I dropped the O-U-S and put O-N. Catherine Nils, a fifth-grade student at Maroa Forsyth Grade School, finished in second place. The word that stumped her was luminaria, describing a small paper lantern used as a holiday decoration in the Southwest United States and in Hispanic culture. Lasting as many rounds as she did was quite the feat. Challenging words throughout the bee include sojourner, calamitous, firmament, ignoble, fiduciary, and ebullience. A total of 44 students in 4th to 8th grade competed in the Spelling Bee from schools across Macon County. Scripps provides 400 words to the Macon-Piatt Regional Office of Education to use in the local competition each year, according to Regional Superintendent Matt Snyder. The 5th round of the Bee was a battle to secure that 9th spot, as 5 out of the original 13 who started the round had misspelled a word. This resulted in a spell-off to determine who would advance to the 6th round with the 8 remaining spellers. Sarah Crushy, a 6th grader at Maroa Forsyth, secured the spot and joined the other spellers advancing to the Regional Bee after several intense rounds. The word she spelled to secure her spot was marionette. Catherine and her sister, Isabella Nils, were one of 3 sets of siblings that competed in the Bee this year. Isabella finished 3rd overall. Since they regularly quiz each other, neither was surprised to make it to the end together. We've always studied the same words together, so I thought, whatever she'd do, I would do too, Isabella said. The other 2 sibling pairs were 8th grader Maggie Pritz at Meridian Middle School and her sister Charlotte in 5th grade. Brother and sister pair Makobe Adams, 8th grade, and Makayla Adams, 6th grade, were representing Mount Zion. The finalists beside Arnav, Catherine, and Isabella are Maggie Pritz, 8th grade, Meridian Middle School, Makobe Adams, 8th grade, Mount Zion Junior High, Nate Bivens, 6th grade, Garfield Montessori School, R.J. Rosero, 8th grade, Johns Hill Magnet School, Seamus Jordan, 6th grade, Dennis School, Sarah Crushy, 6th grade, Maroa Forsyth Grade School. Snyder said, getting to see the kids who come back each year is encouraging, noting that it's special to see when they brave standing in front of an audience and spell difficult words. Sometimes the younger spellers that can get in front of an audience like that and spell so well, it always amazes me, Snyder said. We get to see them once a year, and they just kind of grow up in front of you. You get to see all of that. On to page 2, and the Blagojevich corruption case. Commute doesn't sit well with Illinois officials. Out of Chicago, by Jerry Nowicki. There was little support Tuesday at the former stomping grounds of ex-Governor Rod Blagojevich for President Donald Trump's decision to commute the remaining years of the disgraced former Democratic governor's 14-year corruption sentence. House Republican leader Jim Durkin of Western Springs said in an interview Tuesday he disagreed with the president and called the decision disappointing. "Currently, we have a massive federal investigation into corruption in the state of Illinois, and this action distracts and also dilutes what I think is the proper role of the Department of Justice to root out corruption," he said. In a statement, Governor J.B. Pritzker, who has on several occasions argued that the ex-governor should serve his full sentence, echoed that sentiment. "Illinoisans have endured far too much corruption, and we must send a message to politicians that corrupt practices will no longer be tolerated," he said in a statement. "President Trump has abused his pardon power in inexplicable ways to reward his friends and condone corruption, and I deeply believe this pardon sends the wrong message at the wrong time. I'm committed to continuing to take clear and decisive steps this spring to prevent politicians from using their offices for personal gain, and I will continue to approach this work with that firm conviction." Durkin was involved firsthand with Blagojevich's bipartisan impeachment effort in January 2009. "I saw a governor who was rogue on steroids," he said. "He didn't care about the state of Illinois. He cared about his own ambition, and he abused the office. And the legislature did the appropriate thing. The federal courts did the right thing, not only at the district level, but also the appellate court and U.S. Supreme Court, and they said his sentence was appropriate." Durkin questioned why Blagojevich should get special treatment when others who are imprisoned for drug offenses receive decades in prison without relief from presidential pardons. Illinois Republican Representatives Darren LaHood, John Shimkus, Adam Kinzinger, Rodney Davis, and Mike Bowes in a statement said, "We are disappointed by the president's commutation of Rod Blagojevich's federal sentence. We believe he received an appropriate and fair sentence, which was the low end of the federal sentencing guidelines for the gravity of his public corruption convictions. Blagojevich is the face of public corruption in Illinois, and not once has he shown any remorse for his clear and documented record of egregious crimes that undermined the trust placed in him by voters." State Senator Christina Castro, Democrat Elgin, who serves on the Joint Commission on Ethics and Lobbying Reform, issued the following statement. "Rob Blagojevich's sentence was commuted because he is friends with the president and appeared on his reality show, Celebrity Apprentice, on NBC, and no other reason. The misdeeds he committed while governor of our great state are disgraceful and embarrassing, and it's a shame that his friendship with the president affords him the luxury of not facing the full consequences of his actions." On Twitter, Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza said, "No surprise, birds of a feather flock together." Said U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat, Illinois, "Former Governor Blagojevich betrayed the people of Illinois and engaged in a pattern of corrupt behavior for which he was held accountable and which cost him more than 7 years of freedom." And on to page 3, local and state news, Chick-fil-A pop-up shop to visit Decatur. Pop-up set Thursday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Ashley Furniture Lot. Out of Decatur by Valerie Wells. Chick-fil-A fans, Thursday is your day. A pop-up Chick-fil-A will be in the parking lot at Ashley Furniture Home Store, 3705 North Water Street, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday, with a limited menu. "We have a lot of people from Decatur drive to see us, and we just wanted to come to them," said Elizabeth Wright, catering director of the Chick-fil-A in White Oaks Mall, Springfield. While she is not aware of any plans, as yet, to open a store in Decatur, the hope is that the pop-up can visit weekly, weather permitting. "It'll be a tent and catering truck in the parking lot, so weather will be a factor." Ashley owner John Harrison called the event a collaboration among the city of Decatur, Ashley, and Chick-fil-A. "They reached out to us, and we formed an arrangement, an agreement to bring them in," he said. "We know a lot of people are excited to see them." The location at the corner of North Water Street and Mound Road, with Ashley, Target, Starbucks, and Olive Garden, is a busy one for traffic, he said, which is why it was chosen. "We don't know the extent of the company's plans, whether it's a trial market or they just want to bring their services here," said Tim Dudley, the city's development coordinator. "Either way, we're glad to have them here. People have been clamoring for Chick-fil-A for years. We don't know what it will lead to, but we hope it's a permanent store someday." The menu on Thursday will include Chick-fil-A chicken sandwiches, chocolate chunk cookies, and waffle potato chips while supplies last. Prayer vigil in works at Decatur Planned Parenthood. A group of abortion opponents is planning a 40-day prayer vigil to take place outside of the Planned Parenthood clinic in Decatur. The local campaign is part of an organization, 40 Days for Life, that plans similar events around the world. The vigil will take place from February 26th through April 5th, according to the news release from the campaign's organizer, James Comerford. The area for the prayer vigil will be in the parking lot of Horan's on the Corner Florist, across the road from the clinic at 3021 North Oakland Avenue, according to the campaign website. Participants are directed to stay out of the road and will be asked to sign a statement of peace. Abortion takes a tremendous toll on our city, Comerford said, but many people aren't even aware of it. We'll share the facts with as many people as possible during the 40-day campaign. The Planned Parenthood location in Decatur does not offer in-clinic surgical abortions. It does offer medication abortions, which can be performed when a woman is up to 10 weeks pregnant, and abortion referrals and follow-up care. Sean Carney, president of 40 Days for Life, said in a statement that more than 950 communities have taken part in the campaign. He estimated that 104 facilities that provide abortions had closed following efforts by the organization. For more information, visit 40daysforlife.com/Decatur. Two Decatur shots fired, reports under investigation. By Kennedy Nolan. Decatur police officers recovered shell casings from two locations in the city after responding to two reports of shots being fired Monday night. Sergeant Chris Copeland said officers were sent to the 400 block of South 19th Street around 8:39 p.m. after a caller said several shots had been fired. Police found several shell casings in the roadway. Approximately 25 minutes later, police were sent to the area of Wellington Way and Portage Place for another report of shots fired, Copeland said. Officers recovered 12 shell casings from two different calibers at the scene. The Decatur Police Department is seeking the public's help in solving those crimes. If you have any information regarding either shooting, call Crime Stoppers at 217-423-TIPS. Callers may remain anonymous. Crime Stoppers will pay $500 or more for information that leads to an arrest. More local news on page 5. Foot chase ends in teen's arrest. Gun is recovered. By Kennedy Nolan. Decatur police say they recovered a semi-automatic handgun after a foot chase on the city's northwest side Monday evening. Sergeant Chris Copeland said while an officer was on patrol around 5 p.m. in the 800 block of North College, he saw two subjects outside a residence. One man was sitting on the front porch and the other man was standing in the driveway. Copeland said when the officer made eye contact with the man standing in the driveway, the subject walked behind the home and ran northbound. The officer pursued the man on West King Street before he hopped a fence at a home in the 400 block of West King. The officer apprehended the man in the 900 block of East College, Copeland said. During a search along the subject's path of flight, a .45-caliber semi-automatic pistol was found under a vehicle parked at the home on North College where the man stood in the driveway. The 19-year-old had over 15 grams of cannabis and was given a notice to appear in court for possession of cannabis by someone under 21 years old. He had active warrants for domestic battery and non-consensual dissemination of sex images. Officers arrested the man, who now faces preliminary charges in connection with the latest incident, which include resisting or obstructing an officer and aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. Total bail has been set at $40,000, so he will need to pay $4,000 to bond out. Also out of Decatur by Tony Reed, vehicle stop leads to drug bust. Police said a vehicle stop in Decatur and a police dog's sensitive nose led to the seizure of 130 meth pills packed in 13 bags intended for street-level drug sales. A sworn affidavit from Decatur Police Officer James Weddle said the vehicle had been pulled over at 10:30 p.m. near the intersection of East Garfield and Leader Avenues after it failed to signal a lane switch. Weddle said while the 35-year-old driver from Fillmore was being issued a ticket, a police dog called Aldo alerted to the odor of illegal narcotics from her vehicle. The subsequent search of the woman's car revealed the meth pills, which weighed more than 28 grams with packaging. From my training and experience, I know this amount of methamphetamine to be consistent with street-level narcotics, Weddle added. The woman was booked on a preliminary charge of the delivery of meth. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. A check of Macon County jail records showed the woman remained in custody Tuesday night in lieu of making a bail set at $10,000, which means she must post $1,000 to bond out. Residents evacuated after fire. No Injury Reports in Basement Fire at Apartments by Garrett Karsten. 14 adults and 2 children were forced out of their Decatur apartment building Monday by damage caused by a fire in the basement. Members of the Decatur Fire Department responded to a report of smoke in a third-floor apartment at 421 North College Street at 7:42 p.m. According to a fire department report, the fire in the basement was sending smoke throughout the building's 9 apartments. The report stated the cause of the fire appears to be electrical, and the building was declared unsuitable for residents by the city's building inspector until repairs can be made. The American Red Cross is assisting the displaced residents. There were no injuries reported, the fire department said. The fire is under investigation by the Decatur Fire Department Inspections Bureau. And now page 6, Agriculture with Stu Ellis. Gray corrugated silent widowmakers. Heart attacks, Winchester rifles, and even a snowmobile hill climb in Utah have commonly been called widowmakers. Across the Corn Belt, that moniker should be applied to the steel grain bin. It's becoming one of the deadliest facets of farm life. And this year will set a record for the number of lives that are lost in grain bins. It's only February, and farmers are already dying at a record rate in grain bins. In the past 6 weeks, deaths have occurred in grain bins in Brookings, South Dakota, Morrisonville, Illinois, Evansville, Indiana, St. Cloud, Minnesota, and Kankakee, Illinois. That's more than vehicle collisions with farm equipment, and all of them could have been prevented. The fatal trap was set last fall when a difficult harvest caused grain and primarily corn to be put in a bin at higher than recommended moisture. If the grain was not properly dried and managed in the bin, it was guaranteed to congeal with mold and will not flow out when the time comes to deliver it to the elevator. Someone climbs in the bin to break apart the solid mass, and his life is lost, whether conveyors were operating or not. Gary Woodruff, a grain management specialist with GSI, has been preaching grain bin safety for years. He should know. He's lost 3 close friends in grain bins. Jerry Rowe, recently retired as general manager of Heritage Grain at Dalton City, last week wrote an open letter to farmers saying, "Marketing is not your most important decision this winter. As important as it seems, there is a much greater issue this winter. Your safety and well-being in unloading grain bins should be priority number 1. There have been a rash of deaths in the grain industry this last year, both on the farms and in a few commercial facilities. The 2019 crop has had issues. It has been stressed, harvested late, wet, and created a great deal of broken kernels. All of these lead to situations that make storage and keeping the grain harder. Grain engulfment on the farms has been rising. The latest was near Morrisonville, Illinois. While we all know better, please do not enter grain bins with machinery running and grain not flowing. When you have an issue, please contact your local elevator for help and resources to unload the bin without taking undue risks. There are many resources available to explore what one should not do. Just Google grain bin safety and you will have a number of resources. Please be careful. Never do anything in a bin alone and with machinery running. We all want your spouse, your children, and every member of your family safe and able to sit down to dinner together every night." The U.S. Department of Agriculture just proclaimed this week as National Grain Bin Safety Week. Don't do something stupid like climbing into a grain bin by yourself. It will be a widowmaker. And from the money page, in hot job market, half of college grads missing out. Bloomberg News. Millions of Americans are seeing little return from their expensive college degrees, even in today's hot jobs market. For the first time in decades, recent college graduates are more likely to be out of work than the population as a whole, according to the New York Federal Reserve. And for the lower-earning half of college grads, the wage premium is shrinking fast. Unemployment among Americans ages 22 to 27 who recently earned a bachelor's degree or higher was 3.9% in December, about 0.3 percentage above the rate for all workers. It's another worrying sign for a generation that borrowed record amounts of money to get through higher education as the cost of tuition soared. America's $1.6 trillion in student debt is weighing on the economy and spurring politicians to offer fixes that range from targeted aid to across-the-board forgiveness. The strong job market should be helping graduates to pay what they owe, and at the top end of the wage scale, it is. But in recent years, while high school graduates have seen a sharp pickup in earnings, the lower-earning half of college graduates haven't, and the gap between them is now the smallest in 15 years. More than 4 in 10 recent graduates are working in jobs that don't usually require a college degree, the New York Fed says. And roughly 1 in 8 is working in a field where typical pay is around $25,000 a year or less. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.